feel greatly honored to be invited to share my thoughts with you. Today, we are going to talk about the evolution of the human being. Of course, these days we have a kind of controversy about whether we should discuss in schools about not only the theory of evolution but also about the creation of the world by God, the Creator. This has been a problem really in the Western religions like Judaism, Christianity and Islam, which is based on the belief in a Creator. But the problem is that when we think about the Eastern religions, especially Buddhism, we don't have that problem because we are in agreement with the theory of evolution and we have no conflict at all. And I consider that as the kind of maturity in religious thinking that we have in the West, in the East. And the important thing to understand is that the teaching of the Buddha was really a teaching about the evolution of the human being. Although when you read about Buddhism in books, you never hear about this. Because most of these writers about Buddhism, they don't really understand fully the original teachings of the Buddha. If you go to study the original teachings, you'll be able to see that he's talking about the evolution of the human being. And actually, when we speak of the Buddha, we are speaking not about an ordinary philosopher or an ordinary person. The Buddha was the highest point in the evolution of the human being. That is the meaning of a Buddha. Buddha means the awakened one. Now what this means is, if you are familiar with biology and the Darwin's theory of evolution, you'll see that the theory of evolution points out that the evolutionary process is based on a very important principle, and that is called the struggle for existence. Struggle for existence means that people, not people really, animals and plants are struggling to exist. And of course, he said, there is the struggle for existence and the survival of the fittest. Now, the survival of the fittest means that the fit animals and plants were able to survive due to the change in environmental conditions and the atmosphere, the environment. But the actual fact is that no individual exists. Everyone has to die. No one really survived. Every individual that was born had to die. Now this is the problem of life. Life is not simply some mysterious force or anything like that. It is simply the activity of what is called protoplasm. All animals and plants are made of a substance called protoplasm. Now this protoplasm is actually like the bricks in a wall. That is what the whole body is built up of. It is really the cells in the body. So the problem is the struggle for existence continues till the human being evolves. And with the evolution of the human being, we find a proper brain and a nervous system with the senses. And what happens is the brain is able to think and reason out. Now the other animals are not able to think and reason out to that extent. The difference between the ape and the human being is that the ape is able to only react to the environment. That means the ape also has the five senses, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and the body. And when the senses are stimulated, the organism reacts. So the ape is passively reacting, whereas the human being has this ability to delay the reaction and think and reason out and then decide on the proper action to take in a given situation. And this means the human being is able to respond intelligently to a situation instead of emotionally reacting. Although the human being has this ability, that is not fully developed. This is why there are so many conflicts in the world. We make decisions, but we don't really keep the promises that we make to ourselves or to others. Now we find the Buddhists take up the five precepts very seriously, but they don't really live up to that. It's difficult to live up to the five precepts. Sometimes when they become angry, they might use harsh language and even go to fight or even to kill. Why is this? Although they know very well that it's not a good thing to do. Sometimes they might even go to kill their mothers or fathers. Why? Because although they have this ability to delay the reaction and respond intelligently, they don't always do that. That means the human being is not fully evolved. This is why there are wars, there is crime. All this is because of that. So the Buddha pointed out that it is possible to develop this ability. Now this ability is sometimes called the free will. And people think that we are born with a free will. But actually we are not born with a free will. The free will is a potentiality which has to be actualized through practice by cultivating the method. So this is the process of evolution. This is how the human being has to evolve. And the evolution of the human being is not a physical thing. You see, normally the biological evolution happened unconsciously. But here, the evolution of the human being is not biological, it's psychological. So it has to take place consciously. In other words, we have to understand our problem and the solution. It is by understanding the problem and the solution that we begin to practice in the proper way, so that we are able to fully develop what is called willpower, and we will be able to really respond instead of reacting. You see, I distinguish between these two words, a response and a reaction. A reaction is emotional. Reaction is emotional and impulsive, whereas a response is a calm, intelligent action. So instead of reacting, we have to learn to respond. Now, in order to do this, the Buddha pointed out a way, and that is what is called the Arya Tangika Magga, or I have translated that as the Sublime Eightfold Way, normally translated as the Noble Eightfold Path, which I think is not a good translation. Because the word Arya has been used or translated as noble. Arya doesn't mean noble. Arya is a special, supernormal state that the Buddha pointed out. That he used the word Arya to mean not the normal, but the supernormal. The normal is called the Putuchan, the ordinary, the common way. And the supernormal way is the Arya. And the supernormal state is what I call the sublime state. So the important thing about this is that this state of mind, which is the evolved state of the mind, there are really two main levels which today we know as Superman. We see in the movies Superman flying in the air and all that. But actually, such supermen lived during the time of the Buddha. When the Buddha was born, not the Buddha, I would say Prince Siddhartha, when he was born, there were supermen who could fly in the air also. Not only flying in the air, but they could walk on water or plunge into earth. They could go through walls. That kind of person, even now, today in India, some believe that there are such people still living in India. But the important thing is that the Buddha went beyond that state. And going beyond that state, entered that sublime level, which is ultimately the end of the process of evolution. That is the end, because you can't evolve further, because the struggle for existence stops at that point. It is this struggle for existence that continues the process of evolution. But when the struggle for existence stops, you can't evolve further. There is nothing to evolve, because really the whole process of evolution that began with a mistake. Life itself began with a mistake. What is this mistake? You see, it started when some kind of molecule like the DNA and RNA, that kind of molecule which is found in the genes, that molecule had a special property, and this special property was the ability to absorb atoms from its surroundings and build molecules of its own kind. And by doing so, what is called growth took place. And growth, of course, involved many other things, like what is today called metabolism, which is a building up process and a breaking down process. While the molecules were built up, the molecules also break down, because it is just following the natural law that everything that comes into being is subject to destruction. And everything that is integrated is subject to disintegration. So the struggle to exist was still an effort to continue building up while there was a breaking down process going on. So there were two processes going on, and when the building up process is faster than the breaking down process, the net result is growth. So this went on until, of course, the breaking down process became faster, and that means decay and ultimately death, complete death. So every individual had to die. So this means the struggle for existence is an effort to be permanent in an impermanent world. This is the mistake. There was an effort to become permanent in an impermanent world. Now, this was all happening unconsciously. The people were not, there were no conscious beings at the beginning. But only when the human being came up, when the human being evolved, that the human being was able to think, reason out, and understand ultimately the problem, which is a futile effort to become permanent in an impermanent world. And when this is understood as a futile effort and a struggle which is painful, why continue this struggle? And so the struggle is stopped. And that is the process of awakening. It is awakening from a dream of existence. Because we think we are existing, but in actual fact, we are not. That is very difficult for us to understand, because we always think in terms of existence. We think in terms of time and space. What is space? What is time? It's all a concept that we have formed in our mind. If we didn't have two eyes, we would not have what is called the vision of depth. We don't think in terms of a depth. Depth is something that we see because we have two eyes, like two cameras taking pictures. If you have only one eye, if you close one eye, you don't really see the depth. But that's not all. If there was no motion in the world, if everything was stationary, we would not think of space. Both space and time comes as a result of change, impermanence. If there was no change in the world, if everything was static, then there would be no time. You see, these things called time and space came from one fact, and that was change and impermanence. Now we think of a past and we think of a future. Past is dead and gone. It's not a reality. The future, we are only imagining a future. The future is also not real. The only reality is the present moment. But the present moment is always becoming the past. It is changing. The present moment is change. If we didn't have the memory of the past, if we don't think in terms of the future, and if we are thinking only of the present, what we see is change. We don't see any existence. The idea of existence itself is coming from the concept of past, present, and future. Are we really existing? If we didn't have memory, we won't be thinking we are existing. You see, if we didn't have imagination, we won't be thinking in terms of existence. This is why one philosopher said that you cannot enter the river twice. Because every moment it is new water there, not the same water, because it's flowing. In the same way, every thought is just changing, new thoughts coming into the mind. And every cell in the body is changing. The child that is born is not the young man or woman who gets married, and the old man or woman that dies is not the same man or woman who got married. It's all different. And we think we are existing. So this is the point, that it is only when we have fully understood this and seen it in our own experience that we awaken from the dream of existence. And it is because we are dreaming all the time. When we think we are conscious, we are really dreaming. And it is in this dream that we become emotionally attached to things, or we hate things, or we are frightened of things, we are worried about things. All this is happening in this dream. But when we have awakened from this dream, we begin to see the reality of this. So this is what the Buddha saw when he awakened from the dream of existence. And the struggle for existence stopped. So you have to become fully conscious in order to struggle, to stop the struggle. And the Buddha not only awakened from this dream, he also went and taught the people how to awaken. And that is how this thing called Buddhism started, which is teaching people how to evolve, the evolution, the process of evolution, how the human being evolves to a higher level. And during this process of evolution, when the mind is purified, the mind has to be purified. Now, if you have read or studied modern psychology and especially things like psychoanalysis, which was started by Freud, you will see that there is a problem created by these emotions. Our emotions are blind. It is our thinking faculty that is aware of the world. And these emotions are coming in conflict with the reality that is perceived through the thinking process and the senses. And this conflict is creating all the problems. Our emotions want permanence, but the reality is impermanence. We think of a permanent job or permanent marriage or permanent love, but we never get those things. This is the emotion, blind emotion. That's why they say love is blind. Because emotions are blind. Reality is different. And as a result, we are suffering. So the main thing the Buddha saw was the emotion which was creating the problem. That is what he calls tanha. What is tanha? Tanha really means thirst. Why did the Buddha use a word like thirst? Because thirst is not something that we do. It is something that happens due to the presence of certain conditions, a thirst comes up. It's like a mechanical process. And therefore, our desires or our becoming angry or fears, worries, anxieties, these are emotions which are blind and happening unconsciously. If we want to stop this, we have to become conscious of this. It is by becoming conscious that we can stop these emotions and even the whole mental process. But we normally identify with these things, thinking this emotion is mine, the desire is mine, or the anger is mine, or the fear is mine, or the worry is mine. And as long as we identify with this and begin to personalize this, we cannot get rid of it. Because to get rid of it is to get rid of a part of myself. So this is why the Buddha pointed out that the only way is to depersonalize this. It is by depersonalizing these emotions and even the thoughts and seeing that these things are happening mechanically. And there is a word for that. It is called determinism. Now, determinism means that whatever happens, happens due to the presence of the necessary conditions. Now, ancient people in ancient times, they didn't know how things were happening in the world. When there is an earthquake, they don't know why it is happening. Or hurricane, or tornadoes, or floods. Now the present day problems. Still some people think it is done by God or the devil. When something unpleasant happens, people thought it was due to a devil. When something pleasant happens, they thought it was due to the God. Now, with the coming of this understanding about determinism, that everything happens due to the presence of the necessary conditions, people open their eyes. In the West, during the 16th and 17th centuries, in the history of the Western world, that period was the period when science began and people began to understand how things were happening gradually. And that period is called the Age of Enlightenment. But in the East, it was the Buddha who brought this to the world long before the Westerners came to know about this. And there was a conflict between religion and science in the West. Now, the Buddha brought this message of determinism, and today it is called the Paticca-samuppada, which is normally translated as dependent origination. Now, this is the important thing that the teaching of the Buddha is opening the eyes. This is why when the Buddha became awakened, he described it as Chakkhum Udapadi, Jnanam Udapadi, Panya Udapadi, Aloko Udapadi. All that means that an eye arose, knowledge arose, a light arose. These are just ways of describing this awakening. And this awakening is the ultimate evolution of the human being. And we can all evolve in this way if we understand how to, because it has to be done consciously by each individual. It cannot be done all together. Each individual has to make the effort to evolve. And the Buddha showed a way which is called the Sublime Eightfold Way. And that means the beginning is first to understand the problem and its solution, and that is what is called Sammāditti. Sammāditti is to understand the problem and its solution. And then comes the Sammāsaṅkappa. Sankappa is really what I call orientation. Orientation means turning in a different direction. Turning in a different direction means our normal direction is whenever a desire comes, I make the effort to satisfy the desire. Whenever anger comes, I make the effort to take revenge on a person or do something like that. Whenever a fear comes, I try to run away. Now this is the normal way. Now instead of doing that, now when we have understood the problem, what we try to do is to get rid of the desire or the anger or the fear or the worry. And that means to calm the mind, tranquility of mind. Today, the Western world people are beginning to realize the importance of tranquility. That's why they can earn money by selling these tranquilizers, drugs. And also, not only that, today we have this thing called stress management, stress. And people talk about relaxation and meditation and calming the mind. All that is because this goal of tranquility has been valued by people. People begin to understand that it is very important to be tranquil. That tranquility is, and this tranquility is what is called nirvana. Now people think nirvana is something very mysterious or some mystical state or something like that. No, nirvana simply means, nir means none, vāna. Vāna is movement, motion. Now we have in Sinhalese, vanenoa, that is vāna. The vāna means shaking, the mind that is shaken. It's now brought to a stillness, the stillness of the mind, which can never be shaken. That is nirvana, the imperturbability of the mind. So nirvana is the ultimate goal. So when nirvana becomes the goal, that is the Sammāsaṅkappa, then comes, of course, Sammāvāca, Sammākamma, Sammāājīva, which means you begin to speak in a calm way, you begin to act in a calm way, and you begin to live in a calm way. So the behavior becomes calm. And the next step is how to bring calmness to the mind itself. First we control the behavior, and that is called sila. And when we control the mind to make the mind calm and tranquil, that is called samadhi. And that process is called samatha bhavana. Now when the mind is calm and tranquil, then the next step is to correct our thinking process. It is because we think in the wrong way that our mind gets agitated, excited, emotion excited. That emotion is due to the way we think and interpret situations. So correcting the thinking is what is called vipassana bhavana. or insight meditation. Insight really means seeing what is inside. Insight. You know what in is and sight? That means seeing what is inside. In other words, introspection. Introspection is seeing what is inside. Seeing what is inside means seeing the mind. When we become aware of the mind, not as just thoughts coming and going, but we have to become aware of the mental process. And only ultimately when we become aware of the process called perception itself, what is this thing called seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking. When we begin to fully understand that, we begin to realize that this whole world that we are aware of is created by this mental process. Now people ask sometimes, who created the world? Once I went to talk to some prisoners, and then at the end of the talk, one young man asked me, who created the world? So I answered, you created the world. And then of course there was another monk who thought I was giving a wrong answer, and he didn't allow me to speak after that. But the point is, but that is what it is. Because I was going to explain it further. Now if you study psychology, and any book on psychology will tell you about the theory of perception, you'll understand that when you study the theory of perception, you will see that the whole world is ultimately created by your own thinking process. So, when we have understood that fully, we awaken from this dream of existence. No, I don't want to go into great detail because we don't have the time. So I'll stop here, and I hope you understood what I was trying to say, that the evolutionary process is ultimately producing a Buddha, and it is every one of you can become a Buddha. Buddha is not just the name of a person, it is a title given to one who is awakened. And it is possible for every human being to evolve to that level. And actually, every human being should evolve to that level to be free from all the problems that we find today in the human life. Thank you. If you have any questions, I would be very happy to ask.
Absolutely marvelous. Have you ever seen the book A New Kind of Science by Steve Wolfram? Is it a very fat book? Familiar with the author, maybe Stephen Wolfram, A New Kind of Science, his philosophy?
I have not seen that book.
Okay, I would have probably doubted that, but yeah. But just because I'm extracting a marvelous section from that. Well, first I must say, yes, a lot of background education. But yes, I believe it is also in your mind. What I thought was just so fascinating out of this whole thick book, but there's several paragraphs where people are wondering if there was a creator or anything. And they described when they did this research in one of the deepest trenches in the ocean, where there is absolutely no light. And they were fascinated by finding these creatures of all types and marvelously colored. Whereas we're looking at in the light on above ground here, there's different reasons for animal colorings, it seems to be, to ward off predators or camouflage, whatever reason. There seems like there is a reason for these colorings. But down there, they could not determine any reason whatsoever for these fantastic designs, absolutely amazing artistic creations on these types of creatures. So it makes you wonder, well, why? Maybe a master creator is sketching, having a good time. And then another thing I just wanted to add on to, I have a very good friend of mine. He had a homework assignment as to how was that? I think he had to find some way to describe whatever what he thought his supreme being was. Well, this man who was always a musician all his life and is an administrator for a guard band. I know I've served with him for several years. His way of describing this is that this creator, a supreme being, is this master composer. And we're all part of this. It's sketching. Having a good time. And then another thing I just wanted to add on to, I have a very good friend of mine. He had a homework assignment as to how was that? I think he had to find some way to describe whatever what he thought his supreme being was. Well, this man who was always a musician all his life and is administrator for a guard band. I know I've served with him for several years. His way of describing this is that this creator, a supreme being, is this master composer. And we're all part infinitely and infinitely changing full score with our entrances and our exits, diminuendos, crescendos, everything. We're all being constantly changed, constantly composed, all by some master composer. And I have found yet whatever, something else. I don't know, I can't exactly describe it even closer, even as close as I think he can do it. That's good. But I thought you might like to go that. Anyway, thank you.
Well, I don't have much to say about that. Well, people can argue in various ways to support the idea of a creator. And I have no conflict with that, because everyone has the right to speak and think. So, everything depends on how you think. So, it doesn't matter. And the important thing that we were discussing was about the evolution of the human being, where all this kind of thinking will ultimately disappear. And people will begin to see what everything is ultimately by giving up all these concepts that people form. Because all those concepts, every reality that we think of is ultimately a concept. That's what we begin to realize. when the mind is calm and tranquilized. So any other questions? Yeah. I don't hear you properly.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. We talk about concepts and I'm thinking about insight. And you talked about insight is when we go inside. And you also talk about perception. When you are looking at the insight and your own perception, are all insights coming from perception? Or sometimes do we come to a place of such a calmness that it's the answer?
Well, what really happens is when we normally think, our attention is focused on external things. So we are aware of external things. Now, in this insight meditation, what we do is we take our attention away from that and begin to focus on the mind itself. And so we begin to see not concepts, but how the concepts are formed. And then we begin to see that the concepts that we form are not so real as we thought. Everything that we observe is simply a concept.